Welcome to the Atlantic Group podcast. Our seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting declining outside contributions. Your contribution covers the expenses of this podcast and also that of our AA service structure. If you're an AA member who finds this podcast helpful, you can contribute using Venmo at AG Tradition 7, the at sign, and then AG Tradition, the number 7, all one word. Or you can use Zelle under agnycinfo@gmail.com. In the note, what's it for? Please write AG Podcast. Thank you for your support.
My name is Bob and I'm an alcoholic. It's nice to be here. What an honor. I love the Atlantic Group. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I have since the beginning. The first meeting I went to was on the first floor lounge in front of the nurses' station at Pride Institute. And I didn't know it was a meeting. They said, we're going to have a meeting. And I was like, a meeting? Like, are we going to discuss the menu or the? I didn't know what a meeting. And then they must have read the preamble because it was a meeting, and they said God, and I flipped out. Anyway, so then when we, you know, I got a couple of days at the treatment center. I was allowed to go out on the bus. It had wire stuff on the windows, and you know, where the gay people would come into the, you know, would come into the meeting, and in St. Paul or Minneapolis, I don't know, I couldn't tell you the difference, and there we were in these clubhouses, you know, and at the time, in this treatment center, we weren't allowed to, ready for this, no sugar, no white flour, no caffeine. Yeah. So we would just run to the table, you know, and just, because it was the real thing, you know, there. And everybody was so nice, you know. And I thought to myself, well, that's because we're in the Midwest and there's really nothing else to do but be nice. So they're nice, you know, right? And then
days went by. I was there for 30 days, you know, it was fully paid for back in 87. It was fully paid for by the Copley Plaza Hotel. Thank you, Copley Plaza Hotel. And thank you. Sit down. Days into it, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I have to go back to Boston. They're not nice in Boston. And they're not. Have you ever been there? They're not nice. And I was like, this isn't going to work in Boston. How are they, you know? And I thought there'd be like, you know, six people sitting around. You know, I didn't know what I was going to find, you know. And so I got off the plane, and I went to my friends, Larry and Virginia's house, because they told me not to go back to my house. You know, for a newcomer, your house could have dangerous things in it, which was unlikely with me because I would snort boric acid off the rug if I thought it was, you know, and it was just like, there was nothing in my house. But I listened to them because I listen, you know, and I went to Larry and Virginia's house, and then I was like, oh, all right, I'm going to go to my first meeting. And I walked down Berkeley Street, and on the corner of Berkeley and Newbury, there's a church called the Church of the Covenant. And I went down the stairs, and I looked in, and it looked like there were a lot of people there. And what I was seeing was only a third of the room. When I got to the door jamb, there were 200 people there. And they were all happy and smiling, like everybody talks about coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, not everybody, you know, some people hate coming here, you know. But I was really surprised. And I knew, I'm considered a loud American. Kind of across the board, you know. So when I go to Europe, it's just like, they're like, what the? Oh my God, you know, because I'm loud here. Over there, it's just like everybody's. And so when you drink,
your hearing goes. So that's why alcohol, that's why drunks are loud. Jimmy, because your hearing starts, that's the first thing that gets hit. And so we're, and I was, you know, Boston's very, very small. And I was a very loud drunk. And so people, they knew me when I walked in the door. They're like, Bob's here, you know. And this guy named Billy, the meeting was packed. And this guy named Billy says, I'll get you a chair. And he pulled out a chair for me. He gave me my first seat in, you know, on my own, my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. That night I went to my first, what's it called? A business meeting. First night out. Yeah, I had 30 days. And I was put in charge, not in charge, I was in a co-chair with somebody to do coffee and cookies. His name was Ed. And we had so much fun doing those coffees and cookies. We're doing coffee and cookies for 200 people. And I kind of got, you know, one of the things that I misinterpreted was they said in the treatment center, you need to do service. So when I went to this home group, I saw that it was also called during the day the women's lunch place. So I went to volunteer to do service at the woman's lunch place. Because I thought that's what they meant. Like, you had to do service, so you had to like go into the city and do something for somebody else. I didn't know they meant just an AA. And so I volunteered there, and you had to really show up because they were homeless women. And you couldn't just willy-nilly, here I am, I'm not here, here I, you know, just like it would get them all crazy. And so I showed up there every other Tuesday, and I mopped the floors, and I cleaned out the pans for the other women that were cooking for them, and I sat at the same table with those women. And so some nights, later on in my sobriety, I would mop the floor once in that space, and then for service, I would mop the floor again the same day, because that was my service commitment at my home group. Now, everybody was really into this home group. You know, they loved this home group. It was called Crossroads. And it was so much fun. I had so much fun, you know, and I was, you know, you know me now. You can imagine what I was like when I had 30 days, 45 days. Like, it was like, whoa. You know, but right off the bat, I could see, I remember once getting into, going to my home with my friend Michael Gardetto, and he had 5 years, and I had, you know, months. And so I thought he was just like a god, you know. And I remember that my phone machine was blinking. You know, you used to have phone machines. You didn't have a cell phone. You have a phone machine. So I pushed the thing, and my friend Patrick, who had the same amount of time as I did, lit into me on that machine like he didn't stop. And I turned to Michael. I said, can you believe that? And he said, Bob, is anything that he said true? And I said, yeah, it's all true. And he said, you can never afford to lose a friend like that. They're going to tell you the truth. So I saw that that was going to obviously be as painful as it may be, to be told the truth by friends, by sponsors, by people. It's really a good thing for us because we can go into delusion so quickly. Our minds are so crazy. You know, I mean, my mind, this arm isn't ironed because in the middle of ironing this shirt, the iron broke. Now, last week, my TV broke. So what do I think? The building hates me so much that they're surging too much electricity into my apartment to break all my electronics. And first of all, how would they do that? They wouldn't. And I have no reason to, why do they want me to leave? What did I do? You know, every time a dog comes up to me and wags his tail, I think, they can smell cancer. I know, I have cancer. They smelled cancer on me and they're just like, oh, this poor guy's gonna die. And just, what is that? You know? I don't know, you know? And then, like I talk to, we have people in this group This group is amazing. Eat, you know, doesn't matter how much time you have, you're here. There's so many people in this room that I love so much, you know, and so we had this steering committee meeting come up, and Ava calls me and she goes, "Sometimes, Bob, when you yell, we can't hear you." It's like, is that ACOA or Al-Anon? It's one of them. It's one of them. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, who can hear that? You know, and so I didn't yell that night. And she called me and said, "You did a really good job, Bob. Isn't that sweet?" Similarly, I get a call from Kevin Heaney before. You're not supposed to say people's last names, I'm sorry. But I think he says his whole name, so. And he said, "Bob, when Clancy speaks, he causes a lot of resentments. I think that you'll be able to do that on your own without swearing." That's so nice, Kevin. Thank you so much. That's so nice. So one of the things that I learned later on in sobriety was that one of the original psychiatrists that were involved with Alcoholics Anonymous came up with the idea of the pink cloud, right? So his theory, if you remember from Psychology 101, is that our egos as human beings, I guess other animals don't have egos, right? So our ego is the thing that gets us in trouble. Because it's like trying to, I need more food, I need more, you know, places to live, I need security. It's like, you know, it's the way us as animals work. So if you, according to this guy, if you stay in the machinery that is Alcoholics Anonymous, it naturally suppresses your ego, thereby giving you a feeling of elation. So this is why, you know, whether they knew that or not, this is why we do service. When you do service in a home group, it's supposedly naturally suppressing your ego. So then now I have to tell you, as tough as 32 years have been on me and maybe you, when I did the steps for the third time, you know, my story, I think, is helpful in that, you know, I drank like an idiot. Like, I was hungover every single morning. Every night. You know, Boston shuts down. You know, they shut the last call is at 1 o'clock. You know, it's like, really? And there was, you know, I was a mess. And, you know, one of the last things that happened was I'm on Cambridge Street and I pick up a guy. I'm going home, you know, and I'm like, oh. And I'm on everything but roller skates. I mean, I'm just like a mess, you know. And so I get him in the living room. And by the way, I was sleeping on towels. So you can't really have sex on towels. It's embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? So I was like, let's do it on the couch. So he, believe it or not, I mean, I'm 60 now. It's, you know, it was different. You know, I was young. And he immediately takes off all his clothes. And then I get paranoid right then, you know, because I'm on things that make you paranoid. And I say, I can't have sex with you, which we all have a right to say and do. He got pissed. So he stole my keys. He didn't steal them. He just grabbed them. He said, "You're not getting these back until you give me $10. Which I know $10 seems like nothing now, but it, you know, at the time it was like, you know, right? And so I gave him the $10, which I can't believe I had on me, and he left, dressed, and he got outside my building and took a cinder block and threw it through the plate glass of the front door of the town. It was a townhouse that was, you know, five apartments on Beacon Hill. And so that was meant for me. You know, that cinder block was meant for me, you know. And the cops came, and I was in a terry cloth bathrobe, and I had hair like this, and because I was, it was like, and I remember standing on the stairs looking at the cops like, I don't know what happened, officer. I have no idea what happened. And I mean, they're cops. They know what's wrong. You picked up a guy on Cambridge Street, and you didn't want to have sex with him. You go, thank you. I gave Bruno $100 to give me 15 extra minutes. So, no, I didn't. I didn't do that. And then the end was, you know, same terry cloth bathrobe. I remember looking in the mirror. I was looking in the mirror. Now, I'm going to be 60 next Wednesday. 60! I know, right? Can't believe it. I just really can't believe it. And so I was 27 years old, and I'm dying. I'm killing myself. That's what we do. I had scabs in my head, like underneath my hair. I didn't know what that was. I thought I was dying, you know? Well, I was dying. And I looked in the mirror, and I was... I looked in the mirror all the time. I just always looked in the mirror. Like, and I looked in the mirror, and I was like... There's a movie called Dog Day Afternoon, and it's Al Pacino robbing a bank. He had two wives, a male wife and a female wife. And the male wife was played by Chris Sarandon, who was playing this really gay, just gay guy. And he needed a sex change, so that's why Al is robbing the bank, for money for him to have a sex change. And they get Chris Sarandon in a barbershop with all these cops around him. And it was, you know, the cops and then Chris Sarandon. And I looked in the mirror, and I was that character. Like, why was I so pathetic? How did that happen? Stonewall had happened 12 years prior. You know, I told my parents I was gay when I was 16. You know, my mother, you know, maybe we can get you hormones. She was like, shut up, idiot. Hormone shots. Hey, how you doing? My name is Bob. My father was fine. My parents were so nice. They were so nice. So how did that happen? And then right then, you know, you look in the mirror, it's like, poof! It's the drugs and alcohol, you idiot. It was the drug. I knew. I got it right then and there. So later that week or that, I don't even know when it, you know, all the time stuff is all weird. The TV back in 1987, when it shut off, It was over. They played the Star Spangled Banner. It was over. Until like 6 or whenever the morning news would come on. And like, so it was a very lonely existence, you know. I love TV. I love TV, you know, and there was no TV, and there was no VCR, because I was shoving things up my nose that would have paid for a VCR. There was no mattress. I was sleeping on towels. There was the mirror, you know, but before the TV went off, it said, if you're having a problem with, dial 1-800, and so I said, what the hell? Call. So I called, and this guy was like this, you know, really funny. He was just really chill. I think he was African-American. He was just like, hey, man. Which is not, you don't talk to me like that. You know, it's just like, what? Man, you have a disease. What? You have a disease. You can't do this by yourself. What are you talking about? You need to be in a treatment center. Really? I just thought I needed to go to Montecatini. You know, in the big book, when it talks about we tried all the different things we tried to not go crazy, one of them is going to a farm or going to a fling. And I thought, if I could just get to Monte Catini, I'll be fine. Because I knew that they'd give me crisp, like mountain white wine. And it would just be, that couldn't be bad, you know. But that didn't happen, and I had no money. I was shoving the bills underneath my towels, you know, to hide them from me. And so the Copley Plaza Hotel sent me to Pride Institute. So I go to Pride Institute, and I go to that first meeting, and really everything changed. I mean, I stopped drinking. I don't even know how. I remember being the first Saturday night, and I'm walking on Charles Street, and I looked in one of those, they used to have coffee shops before Starbucks took over, and it was this really great dessert, you know, cappuccino place. And all my drunk friends were sitting at one table. And I said, what are you guys doing here? Oh, we're not drinking tonight. Whoa. I'm never going to drink again. I didn't say that, but I just, you know, right? And I remember not thinking about, that first Saturday night was a little rough. But after that, once in a while you think, what would happen if I drank, you know? Of course, we all do that, right? And I have a drunk dream. Somebody kick Bonnie's water back to her. There you go. The drunk dreams I have now are always about scotch. Now, I ended on scotch, but if someone my age, if I didn't die, I would be drinking scotch. That's like my, like I'm like a priest, like I would be drinking just lots of scotch, you know. Because when I did drink scotch, my aunt would say, oh, priests drink scotch, do they? And I dream it's a tumbler with ice, and I can taste the scotch. You know, 32 years, like, and you can still taste the scotch? Wow. Then I had a dream once where there's a guy next to me in bed, and we're smoking crystal meth. I never did that. That's a drunk dream. You know, because, like, that's what would happen, the drink, and then, you know, the things that I liked that I enjoyed 32 years ago, and then it would go into whatever's going on now. And then I'm dead. How could a six-year-old body handle that? Some of them do. I've walked into their houses and I was like, what are you doing? And they told me, and I said, you're too old to do that. They threw me out of the house. What are you gonna do? Anyway, so I go, you know, to this, my home group, you know, Crossroads, loved it. I move here after 2 years. And I do the gay circuit, like I mean only the gays, and I'm just the gay circuit. Did that for years and years and years, and then everything started to tank. You know, 13 years. You got to watch out for this stuff, guys, because it'll morph into, you know, right? And through Jeff Rossman, I go into the 10th Street Baths, and I'm crying in the steam room by myself, and I see Jeff. And I could tell he was in AA, and he also had peppermint that he poured on the coils at the 10th Street Baths, which is illegal. And I think that day, someone yelled at you. Some Polish broad came down, Russian broad came down and said, no, Jeff, don't put the... So I was like, oh, just whatever. So I go in and I start to tell him, like, everything's wrong. I just, the sex and the money, and I can't do anything. What I was saying was the bedevilments on page 52 were in living color in my life. You know, and I was going to AA meetings on a daily. I mean, I never didn't go to AA. And he says, you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. I'm like, shut up. What are you talking about? I have 16 years. Like, what are you talking about? You need to do the work. Like, it was in quotes. What work? What are you talking about? Well, after I had that conversation with him, I started going to meetings, and people started to say the work in quotes. I didn't know what I really didn't know what they were talking about. You know what I mean? Like, I'm an idiot, right? So... serendipitously, Landon, where are you going? He went like this with his hand. When I, He's had dinner in my house, just so all you know, if you think I'm making fun of Landon. Beat that. So all these people are talking about the work, and then I remember somebody talking about Clancy. And I was like, what? You know, it was like as if his name was above the title. Well, Clancy said, what are you talking about? So anyway, serendipitously, I get here to the Atlantic Group, and I sat in row 20 on the aisle. Is that where you're sitting, Billy? Row 20? I think you are. No, someone, Angela, maybe? All right, anyway. And who's the speaker at the Atlantic Group that night? Clancy. And I go down in the bathroom because I had 16 years. I knew a lot of people, so I knew a lot of people in the room. And I had an attitude about Clancy, but I had never met him. And I had an attitude about the Atlantic Group, but I'd never been here. And I'm down in the bathroom. The bathrooms were reversed then. And the women's room was the men's room. And I remember looking in the mirror, washing my hands, and some guy says, who's this Clancy guy? And then in the mirror reflection, an older man turns around and goes, I hear he's a real jerk. But he didn't say jerk. And I knew it was Clancy. And I was like, oh, I like him. You know what I mean? Similarly, one time I'm standing out at the, smoking a cigarette out at the gutter, and the cab pulls up, and Clancy gets out, and I go, Clancy, how come you never bring your wife? And he says, because she's been dead for 2 years? Love that guy. Anyways, so when I'm the chair of the, now I'm at the chair of the Atlantic, it's the night he's speaking, and I go to the back because every year my grand sponsor, Tom, would come. And I said to Tom, like, you know, like with a cigarette in my mouth, why do you come to hear this guy? And he started to cry. He started to cry. And he said, Bob, this is the last of a breed of people that would, in their business suit, help you throw up outside a meeting in the parking lot. You know, this is the last of a breed. We don't have to do that anymore in AA. We don't have to bring newcomers home and give them a beer on the couch and have them throw up all over the rug and have them try to, you know, like it says in the book, burn the house down. We don't do that anymore. None of that do we do. You know, maybe somebody does. I don't know. I don't. You know? Like, right? Aren't you, like, protective about, you're not staying in my house, you know? I mean, I have let many people sleep on my couch. I have. But, like, I have to know them for a while. But somebody brand new, I mean, really? Are you going to let them in? We don't, maybe it's a New York thing. I don't know. Maybe other people do it. But, you know, that's, it's an amazing thing, that the numbers of people that that man has helped, you know, and the, you know, this group, the structure, you know, people have such problems with us, you know. Like, when I go and qualify, I do not say the A word until I'm well into my qualification. But then what I do, and this is really good, because, you know, this is my experience. When I had 22 years, my mother got diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and so I went up to help her die. It didn't happen fast enough for me, but it's not on Bob's time, is it? But I thought, you know, you're going to kill this woman before she dies if you don't go through the steps again. You're going to kill her. Throw her right down the stairs. And so I go to this group. This is what I love telling New Yorkers. I go to this group in the environs of Boston that they have another preamble that says, you're welcome at this group, but if you haven't been through the steps with us, don't say anything. Don't talk. I was like, I argued for like 2 minutes, and then I was like, all right, I'll do this. And I got a sponsor, and I said, so I'm willing to do this. Well, it was great because, you know, when you have to share at a meeting, the whole time other people are talking, you're thinking about what you're going to say, blah, 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 blah. And then when the other person's talking and you've shared, you think about, what did I say? Did I make sense? What did I say? And so all that was off the table because I wasn't. All I had to say was, my name is Bob, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm writing. And then the whole room would say, keep writing, Bob. And So I had 22 years. When I had 23 years, I finished with my fifth step. It was an amazing experience. I realized that I had never had a higher power personal to me. I was using you, which was fine. It kept me sober for 22, 23 years. But what changed was I realized that all these like straight guys, like plumbers and electricians with a Boston accent, they're all praying. They're all getting on their knees and praying, and I was unwilling to do that, you know? And once I started to do that, I have to tell you, you know, as crazy as you think I am, if you could hear the things that I don't say to you, you'd be like, he's so well, you know? Because people say things. They say things to my face. They say things. It's like, really? Goodbye, you too. Anyways, I'll tell you that this home group is an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. It gives me such joy to be here always. I'm always early. You know that. I'm always here. I love this group. And I want to thank all the people that make up this group. I love all of you so much. And happy 25th anniversary, Atlantic Group.